Rabine?
It is Rabine, Your Honor.
Good morning to you and Mr. McMahon. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
You may approach Mr. Rabine. Do either of you have any questions before we begin?
No.
Then you may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Sam Rabine. I'm Assistant Public Defender with the Douglas County Public Defender's Office. I represent the appellant in this matter, Elijah Frazier. The matter before the court is an appeal of a separate juvenile court decision where Elijah was adjudicated on one count of obstruction of a peace officer in violation of Nebraska Revised Statute 28906. And he was found to be within the meaning of Nebraska Revised Statute 43247. Elijah is asking the court to reverse the adjudication order of the separate juvenile court. And I would like to use my time to focus on two points of error that were outlined in our brief. First, that the state failed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Elijah intended to obstruct, hinder, or impair Deputy Kripel and her partner from carrying out their duty. To be adjudicated under Nebraska Revised Statute 28906, it must be proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the accused intentionally obstructed, impaired, or hindered law enforcement. What the state is asking the court to do is to speculate on Elijah's intent based off of Deputy Kripel's testimony. However, the best source and the best authority on Elijah's intent comes from Elijah himself. And at the adjudication hearing, Elijah gave credible testimony as to his mental status and his intent during the encounter. He was very honest about the fact that he was upset and frustrated by the encounter, and he even admitted that he was angry by law enforcement being present at his home. And he, moreover, testified that it was not his intent to impair or hinder the deputies, but rather, given the circumstances, he was actually trying to get out of the deputy's way. He explained that situationally.
Could his intent be inferred from the comment he made to the officer about her gun?
So there's two errors or two issues with that. The first being we don't have a whole lot of insight into Deputy Kripel's intent as to what her impression of that statement was or what her reaction was. The only insight that we gained from Deputy Kripel about any of Elijah's behavior during this encounter was that it gave raised her level of awareness of the situation. And I don't quite know what that means. I think it's rather vague. It doesn't necessarily infer that there is obstruction given Elijah's conduct.
Did she also testify that he stepped in front of her path?
She did testify to that, but again,
So the court heard that evidence, heard the juvenile's testimony that he didn't step in front. So the court heard both of those and decided which the court believed. Is that a credibility determination?
It is a credibility determination. I'm not saying that Deputy Kripel's credibility is that she does not have any credibility in this regard, but again, when we're trying to determine an individual's intent, especially in, you know, considering it's required under the statute here.
What's our standard of review in this case?
Standard review is de novo.
Do we give any deference to the court that heard the evidence?
We do. There is deference given to the state's evidence, and they are given, yes, they're given greater deference to that.
Because they're the state or because the court heard and decided credibility of the witnesses?
The latter, yes, because they were able to hear and appraise the credibility of the witnesses at the adjudication. So, moving on with intent here, he explained that he was unintentionally caught between the two deputies and his mother. He described how he's tried to get out of their way but was unable to, given the fact that he was caught between the two deputies and backed up against the porch of his home. He further explained that the statements that he made, and that's another, going back to your question, he also explained that though he did make that statement, it was not his intent to obstruct, impair, or hinder Deputy Kripel or her partner from carrying out their duty.
Are we exploring the word obstruct instead of intent?
I would like to think that we are still discussing intent here. I think obstruct, we can discuss that, but I think it still goes the issue to whether his intent was present here. And it's the state's burden.
He intended to be where he found himself. Is that a correct statement?
I'd say he did not intend to be there, no. And
okay, thank you.
Yes. And at the end of the day, it's the state's burden, of proof to prove all elements of the statute in question here. One of those elements is intent. And again, we don't have any real clear-cut testimony from the state about intent aside from conclusory statements about Elijah's conduct. And so it's for that reason, weighed against that the greater weight should be given to Elijah's testimony because he was able to more accurately give a better recounting of his intent.
Can intent be inferred from conduct?
It can, but again, we still have a source here from Elijah who is able to directly testify to what his intent was.
He's not exactly an unbiased source, is he?
I would argue that Deputy Kripal would probably not be an unbiased source.
What's her interest in this?
I would argue that I can't comment on that. Just moving on to our next point, assignment of error. Our next argument is that the state failed to prove that Elijah's conduct actually obstructed, impaired, or hindered Deputy Kripal or her partner from carrying out their duty. As with the state's testimony, the testimony here in this regard is limited. Aside from a perfunctory conclusion from Deputy Kripal that Elijah's conduct slowed her ability to service the protection order on Ms. Brame, there's no testimony as to how Elijah's conduct or statements actually impaired or otherwise obstructed the deputies from carrying out their assignment. There's no testimony that the deputies were unable to serve the protection order or to place Ms. Brame under arrest. In fact, Deputy Kripal confirmed...
Does that require a complete inability to perform the official act?
No, it's not required, but it goes more to the point, I think, you know, we're not saying that they failed to do these actions.
To effectuate the arrest.
Correct. That's not under dispute here. They were able to carry out their duty. It's not determinative, but it is, I think, an important factor.
What does the verb hindered add to this discussion?
I think hinder is... I can't comment on that. I'm sorry. I don't...
Is it to make it more difficult?
I would say that's a fair... I'd say that's a fair conclusion, yes. And I don't think, again, that we have any evidence that his conduct necessarily made it more difficult for them to carry out their performance or to do their duty here. Because, again, the only insight we have from Deputy Kripal is that her level of awareness was raised during this encounter and situation, given Elijah's conduct here.
Did they have to stop effectuating the arrest of your client's mother to deal with your client?
I believe the factual narrative here is the deputies served the protection order on Elijah's mother and then quickly proceeded to effectuate the arrest. Deputy Kripal testified that when Elijah stepped forward, that's when the takedown of Elijah occurred.
So they took him down before or after they served the protection order?
I believe it was after the protection order was served, but before the arrest warrant was executed. Moving back to the discussion about Deputy Kripal's impression of this encounter, again, I don't mean to be a broken record here, but we only have the insight that her level of awareness was raised during this encounter. And realistically, it's a vague description of her mentality here. And I think realistically can apply to almost any situation where law enforcement are engaged in their duty or where they're performing their duty with the public, whether it be issuing a traffic citation or responding to an emergency. It's just too vague without more to conclude that a raised level of awareness means that they are being obstructed. And just a further, you know, analysis of the facts here also establishes we don't have a finding of obstruction. Unlike other case law, Elijah did not run away from the deputies, nor did he encourage his mother to run away from the deputies, ultimately not charged with resisting arrest. When Elijah was taken down to the ground, he allowed himself to be taken down, he allowed himself to be handcuffed, and he allowed himself to be placed in a cruiser. And just with the step forward, I don't think that that's sufficient to prove obstruction either. I think it's a rather innocuous act that could mean a lot of things.
It's not an obstacle?
I think that is what the state will likely argue, that it was an obstacle or presented an obstacle. My guess is that it would be more considered a physical interference rather
than... Prior of fact could have considered it to be an obstacle?
They probably could have considered it to be either, yes. So at the end of the day, what the state is trying to do is to convince or trying to portray Elijah's conduct as being obstructive, but expressing frustration towards law enforcement is not obstruction. Asking questions of law enforcement, as Elijah did, and not receiving any instructions or commands, that's not obstruction. Being stuck in a place between law enforcement is not obstruction, and certainly a raised level awareness, I would argue, is not obstruction either. I see I'm out of time. Are there any remaining questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. McMahon, good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. Chief Justice Hebekin, your honors, my name is Christopher McMahon. May it please the court. I'm a Douglas County Deputy Attorney, and I represent the state on this matter today. Your honors, this decision from the lower court was made by Judge Vernon Daniels. He's a judge for the separate juvenile court of Douglas County, and we would ask this court to affirm his decision. It's the state's position that Judge Daniels made the proper determination and that he wrote a clean order in this case, and I would refer to that order of his dated May 5th of 2022, where he said, after testimony was provided by both Deputy Kripal and the juvenile, under direct observation of both witnesses as well as the sum of their testimony, we find the deputy to be more credible, probative, reliable, and entitled to weight. And your honors, this is important because for the most part, the testimony of both Deputy Kripal and the juvenile correlate to most of the facts, but there are a few key discrepancies, and I believe you noted them with Mr. Rabein, and that was more or less to do with when the deputy stated that the juvenile moved toward her on two occasions, but then under direct and cross-examination of the juvenile, he had conflicting testimony and said that no, he never moved forward, he moved back, and in fact, he said he was pinned against the fence or the steps and couldn't even move out of the way. So the extent that those two testimonies and factual basis directly conflict, I would ask this court to give deference to Judge Daniels' determination as he was present as the finder of fact in that case. To reply to some of the points that were made by Mr. Rabein, in terms of intent, I believe the statute looks at intent to any extent it does. The intent of the obstructor, not the obstructee, the mental intent of what Deputy Kripal was going through, it should be irrelevant in this fact.
Is circumstantial evidence appropriate to consider in determining the intent of the charged individual?
Well, it has to be, Your Honor, because we don't know what was in his mind. We can't read his mind. We don't know what he was thinking. We have to look and infer that intent from his actions and his words. And in this case, we know what he said. He admitted to it, and Deputy Kripal confirmed it. He said, "You're little. You're going to need a gun." He also admitted that he was bigger. We confirmed that she was smaller than he was. We know she's a female, he's a male. We know she is older than him. In hindsight, I wish I would have made it clear on the record just how much of the size discrepancy there was between this small sheriff and this young man. It was clear to the finder of fact in the courtroom, but unfortunately that's not preserved in detail for the record. We only know that he was bigger and that she was smaller. We don't know.
Are we clear, and forgive me if I'm not knowledgeable enough on the record, that the finder of fact determined that the juvenile obstructed and or impaired and or hindered? Which of those?
We don't know directly from the order. We just know that he found the burden of proof was met by the state.
With respect to 28-9061.
That's correct.
Is that right?
And
so what is obstructing in that statute, where the statute says a person commits the offense of obstructing a peace officer when he or she intentionally obstructs?
Yes, Your
Honor.
It's
obstruct. I don't know what more we're learning there, but we do learn impairs or hinders.
Right.
Would be such a thing.
So you're right. It has the three languages in its or. It's not and, so it's not cumulative. It could be either of the pieces.
So now, to follow up with Justice Castle's suggestion, perhaps this is a finding by the trial court that the juvenile hindered.
It could very well be. The state's position is that the juvenile obstructed and hindered. Personally, I look at an obstruction as a physical, as some kind of barrier to prevent. A hindrance is more of a temporal type of situation, a timely issue. Now, I would argue, and the state's position was, that Elijah King, the juvenile, was both a physical barrier. He was larger. He moved toward her. He flexed on her. She stated in her testimony that she attempted to move around, and he stepped toward her again. So I would argue he was a physical obstruction. But, Your Honor, to your point, I would also argue that he was a hindrance. Now, at trial...
And I beg your pardon, would that, if the finder of fact said it was a hindrance, would that be sufficient?
Your Honor, it should be, because
should
the
be
statute
sufficient
says...
sufficient the way the statute is written.
The statute
right?
says or,
okay,
not and. Correct. That's the state's position. It was not clear in the adjudication order which condition was met, but again, I would argue both. Now, to the hindrance factor... At trial, the public defender had repeated questioning based on the timeliness. How long did that take? Did that take mere seconds? There was an objection made for leading the witness that I believe was sustained in that regard. There were several objections made on relevance, which were overruled. It's the state's position that the timeliness matter is not relevant because a hindrance should not have any kind of temporal trigger. There shouldn't be a certain amount of time where 30 seconds is okay, but a minute or more is considered a hindrance. I don't think there's any case law that would support that finding. I believe the definition of a hindrance should be what's followed in this case.
I'd like to ask you a slightly different question about the statute. With respect to the service of the protection order, I don't think anyone is disputing that that was being done under color of authority.
Correct.
Was it in the enforcement of the penal law to serve a protection order, and or, in the alternative, was it for the preservation of the peace, or both? What's the state's view?
Your Honor, we did research with Mr. Troy Johnson, the director of the Creighton Law Library, and an expert in legal research. We took the statute back to the 1976 77 time frame where all of the criminal law statutes were updated in Nebraska. We went back further than that to 1922 to look at the language. Now, the 1922 statute did not contain the penal law and the preservation of the peace verbiage. That was added at some point in between, likely the 76-77 revamp. We were hoping, Mr. Johnson and I, that there were some floor notes from the legislative session that would add color to that so that we could address that directly before the court today. Unfortunately, that did not exist. It just wasn't present. We did extensive research into Nebraska cases, into surrounding court cases. It seems like typically the court's determination is based on the clear language. I would just point to perhaps Black's Law's dictionary in this case, penal related to the punishment of offenders under the legal system. Obstruction, you know, it's a very interesting thing. I think in the public defender's brief, he actually points to a great case at State versus Elsington, which is a Nebraska case from 2005. It defines preservation of the peace as maintaining the tranquility enjoyed by members of the community where good order reigns, which sounds very nice. So I think that's an excellent definition. It's the state's position that both affecting an arrest and serving a protection order would be maintaining the tranquility enjoyed by members of the community where good order reigns. So both, Your Honor.
Right. I had a question in the middle of that, but I lost the train of thought, so I'll let you continue.
Well, Your Honors,
I recall what it was. The record does not tell us what type of protection order was being served, does it?
It doesn't. What the record does tell us is that Deputy Kripal was asked, what do you do in your, she has 7 years of experience in this, and she just stated that when there is an arrest, they are ordered to serve the corresponding protection order.
We don't know if it was a harassment protection order, a domestic abuse protection order, a sexual assault protection order. We just don't know.
We don't know. We just know it's something serious enough to require an arrest. That's all we have from the record. However, it would seem that the definition of effecting an arrest is penal in nature, related to punishment of offenders under the legal system, and it would really stretch the boundary of imagination to not find that meets your definition, Your Honor.
Okay.
So we would just ask, to the extent that the elements, it's an or, it's not an and, so both need to be met, although the state's position is he was both an obstruction, physical in nature, and a hindrance, temporal in nature. Again, the line of questioning at trial was how quick the encounter took. Was it mere seconds? Was it minutes? There was testimony from the deputy that it took five. She stated she didn't know exactly because she was in the heat of the moment and it took time, but she approximated 5 to 10 minutes. It's uncontested that she was there to serve, that he admitted he got angry, that he started yelling at them. It's uncontested that he said, "You're little, you're going to need your gun." It's at that time that, from her testimony, her partner stepped in behind him to effect a takedown. Now, under the defendant's testimony, oh, I see that I'm out of time, Your Honors.
You may complete your thought there.
Under the defendant's testimony, he stated he raised his hands and then somehow struck the male deputy in the nose, causing a nosebleed. He wasn't sure if that was with his phone or something else, but then he was taken down. Then he was handcuffed and placed in the car, and then when all of that was done, they were able to come back and serve and arrest the mother. So just that series of events took, in her estimation, 5 to 10 minutes. So with that, I would submit to the court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. Counsel, that concludes arguments then in In re Interest of Elijah King, and you are excused.
Thank you.
The next case of the day then is In re Trust of Hessler. I am recused from this particular case, so Judge Pankin is going to rejoin us.